In the course of a month, three people who I knew personally have died. Two of those who died, the relationship was 40 plus years. And with long-term relationships, death brings up memories, triggers about what was and what should have been. And that happened with me. It was in that moment when those memories popped up that I had an epiphany. And the epiphany was that not only do I need to surrender my present to God, my future to God, but I also need to surrender my past as well. And I mentioned this dilemma to a Zoom room, three people. And she knew a little bit of my story. And she shared this with me that was shared with her by her pastor. You have to forgive before you can grieve. You have to forgive before you can grieve. That was an aha moment for me and will be a segment somewhere along the way in the course of our conversations on grief. This is Donna Williams, and you are listening to my podcast, Life, Pain, Laughter, and Donna. Maybe you're wondering about this title for my podcast, and it's also the title of one of my blogs, Life, Pain, Laughter, and Donna. Well, it came about because some years back, about 4 or 5 years, I needed knee replacement surgery, and I had knee replacement surgery. The good thing about knee replacement surgery is soon as you come out of that surgery, the pain you may have experienced is gone. The challenging part about knee replacement surgery is physical therapy. Because here's one little thing, either they told me and I didn't pay attention to it, or I just was not told, they have to straighten out your leg. Your leg is not straight when you come out of that surgery. And so you have to go through physical therapy to straighten out your leg. I called it the torture chamber because it was a challenge. There were devices where you were lifting your leg, and there was the bicycle where you were, you know, doing revolutions. I had a hard time doing the revolutions because I also had a hip issue. So I was pedaling and doing the best that I could, and I couldn't quite get the pedals all the way around. And then there was this one exercise where they had little chairs on rollers, like office chairs, but miniature size. And you would sit down, you would straddle that chair backwards. You would straddle it backwards. And then you would just do laps around the floor on that chair. And so the life is about the things that show up at any given moment. The pain is about the challenge of life, the times when life blindsides you. And then the laughter is in those moments where that's all you can do. When you're that person, grown adult, on this little miniature chair, sitting on it backwards, straddled it, and you're walking around in circles. So this is the third episode of Good Grief. Good Grief. I trust that you have enjoyed the first two episodes, and not only that you have enjoyed them, but that you are also sharing them. I want us all to become better at grieving. I want us to experience good grief. Again, I'm not a therapist. I'm not a counselor. I'm just sharing with you my experiences and the insights I have gleaned by talking to others who have dealt with grief or who are dealing with grief, plus my own personal research about grief, looking into grief. I'll do a little recap tonight as we get into this third episode. But I wanted to share something. I started to write a booklet. In fact, I completed it years ago. I may self-publish it. But in the foreword, I want to read this to you. I have long held on to the premise that we should not declare when a loved one dies that our lives ended. Though there is that stinging void in our lives, we who remain behind have to learn to live with our loss as well as learn from it. Still, there are some additional losses we must acknowledge even as we learn to live without that loved one. And I'm referring to what we call secondary losses, kind of like that loss of not being able to fix anything before a loved one dies and you have to forgive before you can grieve. However, I discovered a blog that eloquently expressed another kind of death that is concomitant to the loss of a loved one. It is a loss I sensed but never was able to put into words. This writer hits the proverbial nail on the head. And the title of this blog was The Death You Die When They Do. And here's words from the blog. You lose the part of you that only they knew. You lose some of your story. It simply dies. Friends, as you grieve for those who are gone, know that it's normal to also lament the part of you that they've taken with them. While those experiences formed you and reside deep in the fabric of your very heart in ways that certainly transcend your memories, the painful gaps will still be there in what you lose without their eyewitness testimony. Those aren't just flowery words meant to simply paint a picture of grief. They're a vivid description of real personal loss. A part of you does indeed die when someone you love passes away. May they and the unique part of you they've taken with them both rest in peace. And this is an excerpt from John Pavlovitz's blog, Stuff That Needs to Be Said. A part of you does die. Your life doesn't end, but those little intimate things that you shared with each other, the inside jokes, the stories you told each other, the conversations you had about things that you observed that no one else knew and no one else would get, that when that loved one dies, that dies as well. That dies as well. Going back to the foreword to my booklet, it is true, part of our life story dies with the loved one. The parent is no longer there to remind us of our childhood. The spouse is no longer around to bring up that private joke or shared experience that either had us laughing our heads off or shaking our heads in chagrin. We lose the shared parts, the joint experiences. We no longer have that partner with whom we can reminisce and laugh and reflect about yesterday. It is a loss within a greater loss with which we will have to learn to live. I often remind people that memories never go away, that we can tap into our memory banks at any given moment, but the joy of sharing those memories face to face is a loss that we will never be able to recreate, even when we share the stories with someone else. We'll never be able to recreate them, not recreate, different word, different meaning. We'll never be able to recreate them, even when we share the stories with someone else. May they and the unique part of you they've taken with them both rest in peace. Yes. So there are those losses, those shared moments, those shared experiences that no one else knows, no one else will get. Good grief. And as I've said in the last two episodes, grief is an adjustment to loss. And so you can grieve anything. My focus for these episodes is death, but you can pull from this conversation that I'm having with you nuggets, bullet points that you can apply to whatever it is that you're grieving, whatever grief moment you're processing your way through, whatever loss moment you're processing your way through. A reminder, this is a faith-based podcast, and my mission statement for this podcast is to encourage and support those who grieve one conversation at a time. We're not face-to-face, but I'm hoping that there is a connection and something is resonating with you as we go through these episodes. And I use the scripture Isaiah 41:10 from the Passion Translation because I like the energy of the Passion Translation. Do not yield to fear, for I am always near. Never turn your gaze from me, for I am your faithful God. I will infuse you with my strength and help you in every situation. I will hold you firmly with my victorious right hand. I like that line. I will infuse you with my strength. We understand infusions. Blood infusion gives life, and a God infusion gives strength. And he says, I will infuse you with my strength, and I will help you in every situation, even our grief situations. He does not leave us to our own devices. He is with us every step of the way. And so I'm going to do a little recap as I talk about good grief and better at grieving, which sounds like an oxymoron, the idea of getting better with grieving, because who says I want to be better at grieving? It sounds like I want to be the standard for how one is to grieve. No. Our desire is to heal. And time may heal all wounds, but it's really taking the right steps that will bring about the healing. So the better we become at grieving, the sooner the healing will come. The void will always be there, and the grief moments will always show up, but we will move towards healing. We will not return to life as it was before that loved one died, but it will become what I call the new normal, or if you like, another normal. So we are moving through this process of grief. And I again share with you the quote, Colin Murray Parks, a psychologist in the UK, from which Queen Elizabeth pulled her quote, "The pain of grief is just as much a part of life as the joy of love. It is perhaps the price we pay for love, the cost of commitment." And I remind you again, to try to deny the grief is to try to deny the love. Celebrate that you loved and that you were loved. I've encouraged you to keep a journal. Please keep a journal. Journal your memories. And when you journal your memories, journal also the emotions that come up as you have journaled those memories. What resonated within you as you journaled those memories. The one void that remains, and not just the loss of the loved one, is the fact that we don't hear the loved one's name spoken by many people after they have passed away, especially as the time stretches out. You don't hear their name spoken. No one reminds you of their memories of your loved one. And so from time to time, I suggest that you say your loved one's name. Put it in a recording, a video, say their name, and then play it back just so you have the comfort of hearing their name. And let your loved ones know, your family, your friends, that it is not painful for them to say the name of your loved one, for them to bring up a memory, whether it is a memory that brings a little sadness or a memory that makes them laugh. Give them permission to say the name of your loved one and to always to share the memories, that you embrace those moments, that you are open to those conversations. I shared, I think in the second episode, this quote by Mitch Albom, who is the author of Tuesdays with Maury, I believe. Stories about his connecting to a teacher and their relationship up until the end of Maury's life. So here's his quote about loss. "You have to start over. That's what they say. But life is not a board game, and losing a loved one is never really starting over. More like continuing without." And that's what I meant by the new normal. You are continuing without. Continuing without. Pressing your way forward. Processing your way through on the journey of grief, but you're continuing without. People will, in their moments of trying to express their condolences, will say, sorry for your loss. We know they're not lost. They're not misplaced. We know exactly where they are as believers, if they were believers. But their death is not an end-all to what others call loss, because there are other things that are lost. Remember, I shared earlier from my booklet about those shared moments and experiences that are also lost, because no one will really get them. Grief is not linear. I'm doing a recap. Grief is not linear. It is a roller coaster ride of emotions all over the place. If you love roller coasters, I don't care how much you love them. You're sitting there before they start and you're excited and you're laughing and you're like, let's do it. And then the roller coaster ride starts and suddenly that anxiety begins to rise and you're screaming. Even if you're holding your hands in the air, if you hit a bump or it does a loop-de-loop or it goes in and out and over, though you love the ride, your emotions are all over the place. We don't love the fact that we have lost a loved one. And those emotions are all over the place. So grief is not linear. Don't expect it to be a straight shot from here to there. We find ourselves in different stages, maybe not all the stages that Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross researched and presents, but some of those stages pop up: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance, all the things that we have to process as we move our way through grief. Grief is not polite. It will show up just when it will show up. You can just be sitting there, maybe enjoying something, and all of a sudden, grief comes. And you are in that moment broken, and you have that meltdown. I don't know if I mentioned in the other episodes, I was driving into a city, and I have to cross a bridge to get into the city. And something, I don't know what triggered it. Something triggered a memory. And I was maybe about a half a mile from the toll plaza I had to go through. And I had an extreme meltdown all the way up to the toll plaza. Managed to gather myself to pay my toll. And as soon as I moved past that booth, broke down again. Because grief is not polite. It will show up in unexpected moments. It will be triggered by the most mundane of things. And you have to expect that. And you have to give yourself what I've said before, the grace to grieve. Whether you're in public or whether you're in privacy, you're in an open space or a closed space, you have to give yourself the grace to grieve all the way through. It will show up at the most inopportune moment. And I tell people, when the moments show up, go with the moment and then come up out of them. Grief is not linear, and it has to be allowed to run its course. And it will weaken you, and it will not leave quickly. I'm talking about the entire process. And it does not promise to stay away. I'm reading from another blog, Inheritance of Hope. It will return again and again and again, and you can't predict when it will return. In those moments where you think, oh, I'm going to really be sad about this, you're not. And in other moments where you don't expect, grief hits you upside the head. So it is not linear and it is not polite. Last week I talked about the four tasks of mourning by J.W. Warden, another scholar in the UK. And he gives these tasks to those who are mourning, who are grieving. The first task is to accept the reality of the loss. It is real. No matter how you say to yourself, they're going to walk through the door any minute now, they're going to give me a call, the loss is real. The void is there. And you may love again if it's a spouse, but it will never be the same. Different person, different time, different relationship, different experience. So we must accept the reality of the loss. It is real. The void is always present. And then we have to process. We have to work through that pain of grief. Remember, when the moments come, go with the moments. But the pain of whatever you do as you are sorting through whatever is left behind by your loved one. with a parent having to go to the home and clear out the home and get rid of things and deciding what I will keep and what I will give away, or a spouse or a child, or just going through the pain. We have small groups at our church, life groups, and a woman who was a part of our life group for at least 2 years was diagnosed with cancer while she was new to the life group. And so we have been with her through the process, and we have prayed with her and encouraged her and asked her to let us know how she was doing. And the last time she was in the hospital, the last conversation I had with her, she was very much distressed about a decision that they were making about moving her from the hospital to another place. She wanted to stay there and receive the treatments that seemed to be working, but they moved her. And when they moved her, we lost track of her. And we called and we texted, and there was no way to get in touch with her. And my pastor and his wife one Sunday went to the different places in the city where she had been in the hospital to see if they could find her, and they could not. And later that day, they received word that she had passed away the evening before. And so we have the pain of grief in our group. And one of the things was, with our life group, we have a certain number of individuals in each group. And so now I have this slot open, but I'm not thinking about filling this slot until my pastor says, we have a woman who would like to join your group. And now that this sister is no longer with you, and while I'm saying yes to the pastor, my mind is saying, no, 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 it's too soon. It's too soon. But I have to work through the pain of that loss, adjust to the loss of our beloved sister, and welcome our new sister into the group. But it is a process. It is a working through. Didn't push back, literally, but mentally, I was having all kinds of fits. What the third task, adjust to life without the deceased. What does that look like? For me, it meant adjusting to having to do everything. I can remember one Sunday, I was driving the car, and the car was making this noise. And I'm like, what is that? And I pull over to the side of the road, and I get out, and there is like a spike in my tire. I know better than to pull it out. But I'm like, I've got to find a place to fix this tire. I was trying to get to church. And so I pull into this station, gas station, that says we fix tires, and we don't have anybody that can help you. And so I think I hit like two or three stations before I got someone to help me. But in the moment, I was close to another meltdown, because I was having to do this on my own. I was going to have to adjust to doing life without my husband, of making the decisions, of paying the bills, of making sure the budget balanced, all of those things. When I had to move, figuring out how to get rid of stuff that I didn't need or couldn't take with me, all of those things. So that third task is to adjust to life without the deceased, making all the transitions you have to make to keep moving forward. And then the fourth task is to maintain a connection to the deceased while moving on with life. Not forgetting. Listen, adjusting to the loss is not forgetting the loved one. That you still have the liberty to laugh and to cry and to talk about and to share, even with strangers, to bring up memories. You maintain the connection to say their name. Maybe if you have things that they have written, my husband was a pastor, so he left behind written sermons and he left behind cassettes to listen, to read, to remember. So maintain a connection with the love, with the deceased, while moving on with life. It will be a challenge, yes, but it is that which you must do. So the four tasks morning you can find online, J.W. Warden, W-O-R-D-E-N, or Warden, J.W. Warden, J.W. Warden, online, and there's more information attached to each of those tasks. But let me just read them to you again. Accept the reality of the loss, first task. Work through the pain of grief, second task. adjust to life without the deceased. Third task, maintain a connection to the deceased while moving on with life. You don't have to do these things right away. You don't have to tackle all of these things right away. Give yourself, again, the grace to grieve as you are moving through the process on the path I call the journey of grief. Because the goal is to become better at grieving, to experience good grief. As I said, this is a faith-based podcast, and so I want to read three scriptures. 2 Corinthians 1:3, praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles, so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. So, here's what I see, that God comforts us in our troubles, in our grief, not just that we might be comforted, but that we might also be able to comfort others with the comfort we have received from God. We receive God's comfort as we are processing, but then with that same experience, we can comfort others using the comfort we have received from God. And that's what I try to do. The comfort I've received from God in my lonely moments, in my isolated moments, in my moments where it felt like no one remembered me or my husband. Receiving that comfort and having received that comfort and still a beneficiary, recipient of that comfort, I now use that comfort I've received to do my best to comfort others. Matthew 5:4, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. God's promise to us. As we mourn, as we grieve the loss, as we adjust to the loss, we will be comforted, which links right back to 2 Corinthians 1:3. He will comfort us in our trouble. He is the Father of compassion. He is the God of all comfort, and he will comfort us in our troubles. And then Romans 15:13, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace, as you trust in him, so that you may overflow with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. The source of our joy, the source of our peace, is God, as we trust him, so that we may overflow with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. I want to read a quote by C.S. Lewis. C.S. Lewis married late in life. He married an American woman. It was Unexpected Joy. And he has a book that the title is akin to what I've just said, Unexpected Joy. But she gets sick and she dies. And so now he is, having found love later in life, he is now confronted with grief because the joy he knew is no longer. And here is a quote that C.S. Lewis makes in A Grief Observed. I see people, as they approach me, trying to make up their minds whether they'll say something about it or not. I hate if they do and if they don't. And that's the dilemma. People approaching us, especially in our early days of our loss, and they don't know whether they should bring up our loved one's name. They don't know if they should say anything. And we are seeing them, and maybe we're wrestling with, how do I present myself? I don't want the self-pity. I don't want to appear pitiful. I don't want to appear broken. I don't know why, because grief is hard, and grief is tough, and grief is mean, and grief is not kind. And grief breaks us down. But yet, we, as humans, are protective of our image, for want of a better word. And so I'm kind of dreading their saying anything or asking how am I. But I'm also upset if they don't say anything, which means they've already erased, in my mind, they've already erased my loved one from their mind. They've already erased their loved ones from my mind, from their mind. So, it is a conundrum, this idea of, do I want them to say anything? And I'm upset because they didn't say anything. It is a Grief Observed, and that's probably a good book to pick up. I'm not, you know, here to sell anyone's books, but the more resources and the more things we tap into that make us realize that we are not alone in this process, in this journey of grief. I mentioned earlier, and I've mentioned in all the other episodes, to journal your memories, journal your thoughts, and not only journal that, but journal how you feel as you wrote those things out. And so here's something you can write about. I wish people would, when it comes to your loved one, I wish people would not, when it comes to your loved one, when it comes to your loss. I wish people would say his name. I wish people would ask me how I'm doing. I wish people would bring up a story or a memory. I wish people would not look at me as though, oh, poor you, and then say nothing. I wish people would not avoid me. I wish people would not say, call me if you need anything, but would rather just do something. I wish people would not think they have to talk me out of my grief. Whatever thought comes to you, I wish people would. I wish people would not. Journal that. And then journal the memories that come up as a result of that. I'm going to stop here with this last thought for this episode, and that is the domino effect of grief. And I kind of mentioned it at the beginning about the shared experiences and the shared memories that only you and your loved one knew and no one else would get it. There is a domino effect of grief. The secondary losses of grief. There is the initial loss. And there's some show that's coming on now, or coming up soon, that is all about dominoes, about these intricate domino things that people put together. And you know, when you hit that first domino, there's a chain reaction. And people are astonished and amazed at the patterns that come out as the dominoes fall. Same thing happens with grief. There is that initial loss, that first domino of loss. And then all the other dominoes begin to fall. So what are your dominoes? What are the secondary losses that you have experienced? Could be finance, could be a home, could be relationships, could be a job. Secondary losses. Think about those secondary losses you have experienced. You have the right to grieve over them as well. You have the right to grieve over those secondary losses. And I'll dive a little bit more into those secondary losses in the next episode of Good Grief. I'm going to bring this episode to a close. It was more of a recap, and I've added more thoughts to what I've said in prior episodes. But I want to close it out with this excerpt from my booklet that I do plan to self-publish, simply because I believe it contains principles and concepts, which I will get into in future episodes of Good Grief. Principles and concept. There's the concept of grief, what we have heard about grief, how to handle grief, and then there's the principle, that which we can put into place to move forward, to be better at grieving, to get good at grief. Grief, also known as mourning, is a day-to-day proposition. It is a learning curve that is different for every individual who has suffered the loss of a loved one. It is a learning curve. There are therapists, and I've said this before, therapy is not a bad thing. Remember, I had, in order to get my leg straightened out after knee replacement, I had to go to therapy. It was painful. It was laughable. But my leg is straight because I endured the therapy. And it is a day-to-day proposition. It is one moment at a time, day-to-day. Grief is a wound that heals slowly. Give yourself time and permission to heal. Give yourself time to heal. I can't judge what's going on in the heart of anyone, but I'm always a little concerned when people bounce back from grief as though they did not lose a loved one, as though the next minute they are just all good and all well, and I'm moving forward, and I'm always concerned, but that's just me. That's not to say that that's exactly their experience. But what I am saying is understand that grief is a wound that heals slowly, and so you have the right to give yourself time and permission to heal. Love doesn't die with death. This is a quote from Kate O'Neill. Love doesn't die with death. Love is like liquid. When it pours out, it seeps into others' lives. Love changes form and shape. Love gets into everything. Death doesn't conquer all. Love does. Love wins every single time. Love wins by lasting through death. Love wins by loving more, loving again, loving without fear. I like this line. Love wins by lasting through death. And that goes back to that quote. To try to deny the grief is to try to deny the love, or to deny the love. You were loved and you loved. Death does not abolish love that you had. It is still in place. God's love is there for you, and you can celebrate the love you had as you get better at grieving. Join me for episode 4 of Good Grief as we dive deeper into the secondary losses of grief and we move on to some other principles and concepts. Until next time, this is Donna Williams, and you've been listening to my podcast, Life, Pain, Laughter, and Donna.